You know, sometimes it's the unexpected connections that really grab you. Like when you sent us this material on Alexis to Tocqueville.
Right.
I've got to admit, my first thought was, okay, Tocqueville, champion of democracy, and we're diving into his obsession with Napoleon Bonaparte.
Yeah.
An emperor, if there ever was one.
Right.
It seemed a little mismatched at first.
Yeah.
Like trying to understand a baker by studying a blacksmith, you know. Different tools, different goals.
Totally.
But the more I got into this, the more I realized it's this Napoleonic lens that unlocks something crucial about how Tocqueville saw democracy itself.
Absolutely. And what makes it even more fascinating is this isn't just some abstract intellectual exercise.
Right.
Tocqueville's life was steeped in the whole drama of Napoleon's rise and fall.
Right.
Like imagine, just picture being a kid in France, right? As the Napoleonic era is imploding all around you.
Oh, yeah.
So you, the listener, growing up, you'd be hearing stories not just about battles and, you know, conquests and all that.
Right, right.
But also about how fragile power can be, how seductive authoritarianism is.
Yeah, and it wasn't just whispers and stories, right? I mean, this text mentions a very specific scene with young Tocqueville, like 9 years old, witnessing the toppling of Napoleon's statue in Paris.
Oh, absolutely. And picture that scene vividly, right? Nine-year-old Tocqueville watching this monument, this almost mythical figure cast in bronze being pulled down.
Wow.
This wasn't just about taking down a statue. This was about trying to dismantle an entire way of thinking, and it left a mark on him, you know?
Yeah.
What he saw, it wasn't just a regime change. It was a society wrestling with its own identity.
It makes you wonder, what goes through a young mind witnessing that kind of upheaval, you know? But even though Napoleon was gone, the system he built, the whole framework of France, it was still there, wasn't it? Like the operating system?
Oh, absolutely. The Napoleonic Code, the bureaucracy he put in place, his ideas about how you centralize power, how you manage society. That didn't just evaporate because he was defeated.
Right.
It's like, think of the Roman Senate trying to govern after Julius Caesar, right?
Yeah.
The structures are still there, but how do you actually move forward? And that's crucial for understanding Tocqueville's anxieties.
Yeah.
He saw firsthand how even a defeated emperor casts a long shadow.
Wow.
This wasn't ancient history for him. This was a living, breathing concern.
Yeah.
And it shaped his entire worldview.
So how do you grapple with a legacy like that?
Yeah.
I mean, he heads to America, right?
Yeah.
To study its prisons. But he comes back having written one of the most insightful analyses of democracy ever.
Right.
And this is where his Napoleonic obsession, if we can call it that, starts to make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
He's not just dissecting what makes American democracy tick. He's trying to figure out how to prevent another Bonaparte, how to build a system that's resistant to that kind of strongman rule.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think that's where our journey gets really, really interesting. You know, it's like Tocqueville goes to America to write this grand exploration of democracy. But Napoleon's ghost is always kind of looking over his shoulder.
Yeah, definitely.
Like he's trying to find an antidote,
yeah.
You know? But yeah. The poison's already in the system.
Well, it's that he doesn't see Napoleon as just this one-off anomaly, right?
Right.
He's looking for the underlying patterns, the mechanics of how a society, even after a revolution, can end up right back where it started.
So it's not just about one man. It's the system that makes that kind of power grab possible.
Exactly. And he calls it Bonapartism, right?
Right.
And he's keenly aware that it didn't die on St. Helena, you know? It's this constant temptation, the siren song that can lure even a democracy off course.
Man, and that's what makes his observations about America so interesting, right?
Totally.
Because he's asking, what is it about this American experiment that might prevent a relapse?
Exactly.
It's like he's flipped the script. Instead of just focusing on what went wrong in France, he's looking at what America might be getting right.
Yeah, and it's in those details that it gets really fascinating.
Oh, absolutely. And this text doesn't shy away from the specifics.
No. And one that really jumped out at me was his analysis of inheritance laws.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
So in America, he sees this tendency to divide property more or less equally among heirs.
Okay.
Which, if you think about it, is implicitly contrasted with the French system where you had primogeniture, right?
Right. The eldest son gets the lion's share and all that.
Exactly. And Tocqueville, he's sharp enough to see that Napoleon used that to his advantage.
Oh, for sure. It wasn't just about land. It was about control.
Precisely. By propping up this landed aristocracy, even if he wasn't calling it that, Napoleon's creating a system where power stays concentrated.
And I'm betting Tocqueville saw that and thought, Okay, so that's how you dismantle a potential power base before it even forms.
Right. You spread the wealth, so to speak. You make it harder for any one person or group to grab the reins.
It's kind of brilliant when you think about it.
It is, and it shows how attuned he was to the fragility of equality, both social and economic, right? If the structures aren't there to constantly reinforce it.
It can erode so quickly.
Exactly. Like, almost like how today you see some politicians trying to control the flow of information.
Oh, absolutely. It's not about the facts. It's about holding on to power.
Exactly.
It's kind of a sobering thought, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we tend to think about democracy as this linear progression, you know, always moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
But Tocqueville's reminding us it's this constant negotiation, a balancing act.
Oh, yeah.
And just when you think you're starting to understand the rules of the game, history throws a curveball, something that really rattles Tocqueville's understanding of this whole Bonapartism thing.
It's like, just as Tocqueville's starting to think, maybe, just maybe, America's figured out the secret sauce of lasting democracy.
Right.
History throws this massive wrench in the work.
Oh, yeah, we're talking Louis Napoleon Bonaparte, right?
The nephew, exactly.
Stages a coup, takes power, basically mimicking his uncle's playbook.
It's almost too on the nose.
It really is, like something a screenwriter would come up with, and you'd be like, come on, that's too much.
Right. But for Tocqueville, this wasn't some historical drama. This was his worst fears coming true.
So how did he process it? Because at first glance, you might think, okay, it's just a bad sequel, right? Like a pale imitation of the original Bonaparte.
But that's just it. It wasn't. And that's what terrified him.
Oh, wow.
Remember, he'd been wrestling with this idea of Bonapartism as a system.
Right, a structure.
The scaffolding for authoritarianism. And suddenly, here it was again, playing out in France, a country that was supposed to be a republic, a democracy even.
That's like that saying, right? History doesn't repeat, it rhymes.
Exactly. And it makes you realize it's not enough to just focus on the individual players.
Right.
Because the mechanisms of power, the levers and pulleys, they're always there waiting to be exploited.
Even in a system that's designed to prevent that very thing.
Precisely.
It makes you think about our own systems, you know,
mm-hmm.
how vulnerable they might be in ways we don't even realize.
And the tragedy of it all is Tocqueville dies before he can really finish unpacking all of this.
Oh, right. He was working on that massive project about the French Revolution.
Yeah, and he had a whole section planned on Napoleon, specifically on how to safeguard against this cyclical return to strongman rule.
Man, talk about unfinished business. It's like we're left with this puzzle and half the pieces are missing.
But even with what we do have, there are these glimmers of an answer, clues scattered throughout his work.
And one that keeps coming up is this idea of la vie politique.
Ah, yes. The concept of an active and engaged political life.
Can you unpack that a bit for us? Because it seems crucial.
Well, Tocqueville worried that both Bonapartes, in their own way, they kind of lulled people to sleep, politically speaking.
Oh, interesting. How so?
They turned citizens from active participants into spectators.
Oh, wow.
More concerned with the pomp and circumstance of power than actually exercising their own agency. And this, he believed, created fertile ground for tyranny to take root.
It's like that old saying, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing.
Precisely. And Tocqueville's warning us that complacency, that's the real danger. It's so easy to get lulled into this passive acceptance to become spectators in our own democracies.
And, you know, it's a question worth asking ourselves, right? Have we, in our own time, become a little too comfortable, a little too willing to sit back and watch the show?
It's easy to do, especially in our modern world, with so much competing for our attention.
Absolutely. And maybe that's the ultimate lesson here, right? Tocqueville's reminding us that democracy isn't a spectator sport.
It's a participation sport, one that demands our constant attention and engagement.
It's up to us to stay informed, to hold our leaders accountable, to make sure those levers of power are being used for good.
To ensure that the script of our democracy is one we're actively writing together, not just passively observing.
And on that note, I think we'll wrap up this deep dive into Tocqueville, Napoleon, and the enduring challenges of building a resilient and truly participatory democracy.
It's a conversation that's as relevant today as it was in Tocqueville's time, maybe even more so.
You've heard it here, folks. History might not repeat, but it sure does rhyme. It's up to each of us to listen for those rhymes, to recognize the patterns, and make sure we're not just watching from the sidelines, but actively shaping the world we want to live in.
Because ultimately, the fate of democracy rests not with emperors or presidents, but with citizens, with us.
Until next time, keep those minds sharp and keep those questions coming.